it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
PHLY Eagles podcast, a Wednesday high noon, and the great Zach Berman is not with us today. Got the day off. We miss Zach, but the good news about that is we can finally focus on football. We are going to get real football heavy on this episode. Bo Wolf and Jamie Lynch stepping in for Zach, two football guys. We're going to hear from Trevor Keegan coming up, the fifth round rookie from Michigan, and then Brian Baldinger at the end of the show. Finally, a football episode. Jamie, how you doing?
Yeah, you know, Zach, he's just always so unserious about football.
Oh, I want to talk about non-football stuff.
Let's talk about pop culture and Travis and Taylor, you know.
Enough, like, Zach.
Yeah, so let's get down to it.
This is a football show.
Let's talk some football.
We're going to talk ball. I'm excited to talk to
it's good to be back.
Keegan, the fifth-round rookie, a captain of the national championship team. Looking forward to getting his thoughts on rookie camp, you know, his impressions of Jeff Stoutland for the first time, all that good stuff. And then, I mean, what's better than just talking ball with Baldy?
Oh, Baldy from my old Anthony days with Baldy. You know, he's always great to talk ball with. Excited to talk to Trevor because, you know, great resume in college, and he's coming into an offensive line factory. And it seems like Jason Kelsey, like, doesn't leave the building. Seems like he's there every day still.
Sure.
So he's going to have, like, a soon-to-be Hall of Famer to lean on for guidance. He has Stoutland University to enter. And then he's got Lane Johnson and Jordan Mailata and some great guys to learn from. So it's kind of like a ideal situation for an offensive rookie lineman to come into.
You would think so, and certainly an opportunity to earn some playing time.
Yeah.
So we can talk a little
for
bit
sure.
about that. But in terms of the draft class as a whole, Jamie, you said to me this was very rare for you because it was like for the first time that you got the kind of draft that you wanted.
Yeah, I kind of bent you and Zach's ear off during the offseason that I was cornerback. I wanted one of those top four guys. I didn't really have a preference.
So all those letters you wrote to Howie, they finally got read.
Dear Howie, I think we could be friends. If you just take a cornerback this year, I think you needed to replenish, you know, that secondary with youth. This is, you know, I just heard what's his name? Pat Bev the other day say about the NBA, this is a young man's game now. And I was kind of thinking, like, with the way, you know, officiating favors the offense. Me and you have had this conversation before. The defense is a luxury. Mm. But, you know, these wide receivers are better and more freakish than they've ever been. You know, you can't be a sieve back there. You have to supplement that secondary. And they went out and not only got what I wanted, but they doubled down on what I wanted. And I'm not used to that ever happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, that position specifically, cornerback on the outside, there are not a lot of guys who play into their 30s. Obviously, Darius Slay has done it, but you're still, like, biding time and wondering if the edge is going to come. I don't expect James Bradberry to be on the team this year.
I wouldn't think so.
And so you obviously needed some help there. Now, I don't necessarily know that the Eagles went into that draft thinking we have to go back-to-back.
No, probably not.
At cornerback,
that would be crazy.
Right? Like, I think that there are worse scenarios where they would have been very happy to take an offensive lineman and then maybe take a corner on day two. But certainly the board
fell in their favor, and Howie has talked about it, and I believe this, that like they never envisioned a scenario in which Quinion Mitchell was just sitting there at 22, that they didn't have to move up for him. But certainly they deserve credit for that. And by being patient, they were then able to move up and get Cooper DeJean.
Yeah, I just saw in Rich's morning newsletter that he shared a snippet from the Eagles about Cooper showing up to the facility and Big Dom saying to him, I told you he'd be back.
It's in Zach's story on PHLY.com.
So, like, clearly he was a guy that was very high on their list, and they're sitting there day two going, you know, and the footage the Eagles released behind the scenes is just tremendous stuff. They went and got their guy, and they doubled down on a position I thought they needed. So this is, like, foreign to me. So it kind of got me thinking, like, wait a second, Bo. They went out and invested heavily in a running back this year. And then they went out and doubled down on a position that I wanted to attack in the draft. This is like bizarro world. So I was kind of thinking like, you know, the NFL is full of trends and it goes up and down and in and out. And you always want to
copycat league,
league, all that stuff. And you always want to be ahead of the curve. Are the Eagles predicting a new curve here?
That's interesting. I think the running back thing, there was a bit of zagging while the rest of the league zigs.
Sure.
They think that maybe the difference between Saquon and the DeAndre Swift level of the market is significant enough that it's worth paying at the top of the market, and the things that they want to do in the offense. I think they like adding a guy who they think can be a special player. I don't think that they're doubling down on corner is necessarily trying to get ahead of a trend, nor is it that much of a departure from the way that they have valued that position in the past. I think we talked about this for the past several months, like the fact that they had not drafted a corner in the first round was probably a little bit more circumstantial than it was at other positions. There were times when they wanted to do that, and they've also paid highly for that position, so that we know that they care about that position.
Yeah,
it's not a position that they don't care about.
It's
not like they drafted a linebacker in the first round.
Sure, but you know, they got torched last year, and 2 years ago they had an exceptional secondary with Bradberry and Slay and everybody. And last year, you know, they kind of got exposed. So I think one of the good things about, you know, Howie in this front office and ownership group is that, you know, they admit their mistakes and they go, you know, fix them rather quickly. So I was like, wow, they must have really thought that the secondary play last year was the main reason for this on top of the coordinators by, you know, judging by their moves that they made. So it's interesting to see because they have a lot of talent there. And then you throw Isaiah Rodgers in the mix. You have Slay for at least another year. Bradberry will be gone. And then you bring back Avante and you bring in CJ GJ. And it's like they've really ramped up. Maybe they're making up for it, a lack of edge rush with secondary play. Maybe that could
That's part of it. Yeah.
Another way to look at it, because, you know, that might be their true Achilles heel right now is, you know, edge pressure. You know, Joshua has to step up. Nolan Smith, we don't really know. I don't feel confident saying it. Brandon Graham's here for culture and leadership and tutelage and all that. And then, you know, it's like
there are a lot of questions there. Zach and I talked about this yesterday. It's like,
Huff?
Is Bryce Huff good enough to be a 1A?
Sure.
He hasn't done that yet. Is Josh Sweat going to be more like he was at the beginning of last year or more like he was at the end of last year when he was completely silent? Is Nolan Smith going to be anything? Is he going to be a real contributor on the edge there? You know, can Brandon Graham give you anything? Jalix Hunt, it's probably too soon to expect much from him as a rookie. So I think you're probably right that if you're not expecting quite as much, you need a better secondary.
Yeah.
I also think that Jalen Carter is a big part of that mix.
Like
if they think that he's going to be dominant, then the edge doesn't have to be so much doesn't have to be on their shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the edge rushers and secondary are usually a marriage, and one helps out the other, and you never, you know which one you're going to get. But I would judge by the Eagles' moves here that they're thinking, all right, our secondary probably needs to cover for that extra half second a little bit better if we can't count on Josh Sweat being an 11 or 12 sack guy. You know, Bryce Huff played, what, 48% of the snaps or something like that for the Jets? Can he step up in this role? And then Nolan Smith, they're clearly, I think, banking on taking that next big step next year. I mean, right? Judging by their actions, that's a pretty big role on this team because Brandon Graham is what he is at this point. You know what I mean? And you need that third guy. If Huff only ends up playing 60% of the snaps or 55%, whatever it may be, and Josh Sweat, you know, 75, 80, whatever it is, you're going to need that third guy. And it looks like they're counting on Nolan Smith for a lot.
I mean, at some point you do have to find out.
Sure.
Right? So it makes sense that he has to be playing a penciled into a significant role. And then you got to see how he does and go from there at some point.
Yeah, but it's certainly interesting. I mean, I was pretty ecstatic with the draft overall.
You're more excited about Quinion Mitchell or Cooper DeJean?
I think Cooper DeJean just because of the value. Like Quinion Mitchell, you know, one or two, depending on who you're reading. Dane Brugler, I think, had him 14th overall in the mm-hmm. draft. That's kind of like a lock good pick. DeJean is almost more intriguing because you got him in the second round. So the value increases on another guy that was a top 20 or 25 talent in this draft, depending on who you read. So I think I'm oddly a little... I'm counting more on Mitchell as a sure thing. DeJean, I'm more intrigued by because of the value.
I also think there's more mystery about how they're going to use DeJean.
Sure.
That makes it a little bit more intriguing. Like, Quinion Mitchell probably is going to line up opposite Darius Slay from week one. That might not definitely be the case. You know, Zach was saying yesterday he thinks Kelee Ringo might push for that job.
Great.
Early in the season. It's theoretically possible that James Bradberry is still around, but my expectation is Quinion Mitchell is starting on the outside from week one.
That would be my guess.
Cooper
as well.
DeJean, you know, I don't know. Is he going to just be the nickel? Is he going to be sort of a specialty package player early on for Vic Fangio, and he's using him in different ways? Like
I tuned into your guys' draft show right after the DeJean pick from home. You know, the girls were all running around me. I'm at the kitchen counter.
One of those 18 hours.
Yeah,
that we were
I was like, nah, I'm locking it, and I was commenting. I took Zach's side on one thing, the conversation about the positionless player. I thought it was an interesting conversation you guys had. I don't remember if, yeah, Rich wasn't at the time because Zach leaned on Rich because he made an NBA analogy.
Oh, yeah, he's talking about Spoelstra, of course.
Yeah. But I had the same thought as Zach, that DeJean, hypothetically.
Yeah, it's always hypothetical.
Sure.
There's this positionless nonsense
but
is always hypothetical.
Isn't there a
it's
world...
It's never actual.
...where he's part safety, part linebacker, part slot?
Well, sure, but it's
if he's
not
athletically freaky as everybody says, and then, you know, I saw his high school basketball
but he's
tapes.
Still playing a position.
Sure.
Like, you know, he can do different things from that position, but the idea of, like, a total football in the NFL, where there's like 11 guys, or it's the secondary, and there's seven guys who can all be anywhere at once. That's just not practical. And, you know, like Vic Fangio, for instance, has been coaching his defense for at least 20 years,
sure.
Right? He's not reinventing his defense.
No, he's not.
Because Cooper DeJean can play multiple positions.
But
now, he has, like, you know, there's, it's like, it's a little bit like the way that, you know, Jalen Ramsey was used in the Rams defense for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can line him up in different places and do different things with him, but it's still like he's still taking up a specific spot on the field. Now, if you have Cooper DeJean and CJ Gardner-Johnson, you know, both creeping towards the line and you don't know which one's coming, that's cool. And that's going to be part of the defense, I'm sure. But I just think the idea that you're going to reinvent like the way the defense is played or the way that offense is played because Kyle Pitts is really good hands for a tight end. Like, get out of
it's
here.
Not reinventing. It's more
Isaiah Simmons. Like, if he doesn't have a position, maybe he doesn't have a position.
True. And I think his position is cornerback. I just wonder if they, you know, with more and more 12 personnel than we've ever seen in the league and tight ends being, you know, a bigger part of offensive game plan and strategy, I wonder if there is like an amoeba-like feeling to Cooper DeJean. I wonder if that, you know, really made them go like they were going to get him regardless if they had him high. But I wonder if they're envisioning like this just kind of amoeba player that can be
all
over. But
I do think it's fair to say, given how like over the moon the Eagles were about him and, you know, Howie and Jeffrey both talking about like, you know, we couldn't sleep last night
sure.
because we wanted to make sure we went to get you, that part of the reason for that is because Vic Fangio has a specific plan for him in mind.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Baldy. I'm sure you guys have talked to Baldy at length, but, you know, he said prior to the draft, you know, this is a kid Vic Fangio would want in his system. So it's really exciting. So to answer your question in a long-winded way, I think I'm oddly excited more for him.
Okay.
Just because it's a second-round pick, it's great value, and I think there's Kenyon's going to lock down a side. Like, that's going to be fine. I know what that is. I don't know what Cooper DeJean's going to be.
It's a black box at the moment.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Well, you might be more excited for the second round pick. I'm most excited for one of the fifth round
picks. Oh, yeah.
Jamie, and that's our friend, bring him on, Trevor Keegan, the Michigan man, the captain of the national championship team. Trevor, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're doing very well. Thank you for joining us. How was rookie camp? How was your first time putting on the jersey and being out there as an Eagle?
It was awesome. It was just a breath of fresh air walking in the building. Everybody's so nice and welcoming, and you could tell they have a really good culture, and I feel like I fit that. And yeah, it was really fun. Just seeing the guys up there working, everybody's working their tail off, and, you know, trying to be better and trying to take as much information as we could and take it and run with it.
How did that compare to when you first got to Michigan from high school?
I think I was a little bit more nervous this time, just because, man, I'm playing for the Philadelphia Eagles, so just, you know, that little pressure there was cool to have, but. You know, it's cool because I came to college, I didn't even know what a single block was. So it's a little bit easier for me now to learn a playbook. So it was awesome. And, you know, I'm just excited to get back out there on Sunday.
Yeah, Trevor, I'm curious, like, once you walk in the doors there at the NovaCare complex, how long does it take for a guy like Jeff Stoutland to get his big bear paws on you and bring you in and start talking X's and O's?
Pretty quick. I was doing a bunch of stuff like medical and, you know, meeting with the equipment guys, just trying to get, you know, all comfortable and set in the facility. And then I was eating lunch and Coach Donald came and sat next to me, started talking ball already. So, you know, from the moment you walk in, it's a business, and I'm super excited to, you know, work with Coach Dowd and TJ and as well the rest of the guys in the room.
Now, we know that you were someone who was, like, very much on the Eagles' radar, not just obviously because they drafted you, but, you know, they released the footage. You were one of their Red Star players, meaning you're, like, one of the guys who's up on the board as someone who they think, like, is a Philadelphia Eagle in everything that they do. So Stoutland obviously has, like, a very good beat on you. When he sits down and talks to you, what are, like, is he already on to you about, like, these are the things that we need to work on, these are the things that we're going to get better at? What are those conversations like?
Yeah, a bunch of things. You know, I was asking, hey, what are things I could work on? You know, in combo blocks and mate blocks, a lot of times, you know, in Michigan, I was a little too thick. I would take over the whole block. So just, you know, be able to give the other guy I'm comboing with more of a surface area to hit.
Interesting.
Just little things that I could get better at that I had no idea. He's a wealth of knowledge, and he's already taught me so much. And I'm just excited to continue to learn, you know, watch as much film as possible in this week off that I have.
What about the playbook? You know, you talked about getting in the playbook. How overwhelming is that when you first get your first playbook as a professional?
I don't know if it was overwhelming. I was just excited. And, you know, we're going through installs and stuff, trying to keep up with the older guys in the room and the guys who are in OTAs right now. But it's all the same plays I ran at Michigan. Just, you know, completely different terminology. You know, if it's a two-eye shell or if they're rolling down, you know, 99 or 33, there's a different call for every single thing. Each technique, if a linebacker's in a 30 or 40, if there's a tight three or, you know, there's just so many different calls for everything, just learning the different terminologies. Definitely the little bump in the road, but it's definitely, you know, pretty easy to get a grasp on it and, you know, understand it. But to perfect it, you're going to have to take a lot of reps at it. So I'm excited to do that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Jim Harbaugh, obviously, you know, a pro style of offense that you're familiar with from Michigan. He's entering the league with you. Playing for Harbaugh at Michigan had to be quite an experience. Is there a funniest story about Jim that you can share with us? Did you guys have any milk chug offs or pleated khaki contests? Like, what was it? What can you share with us from your time with Jim?
Man, Coach Harbaugh, he's just his own person, man. You know, for some reason, there's a lot of hate on him in the media, and people don't respect him. But, you know, he always says if you know, if 20 people say something bad about me, but one person says something good about me, that's a good day. I don't know, just his toughness, it rubs off on you. And, you know, everything you hear about Coach Harbaugh in his playing days, how tough he was, and how, you know, if he was running out of bounds, he would try to, you know, get a little hit on him to get a flag or something. But, you know, I love him to death. And it took me a while to, you know, understand him. It took, you know, for everybody. And it just grew our culture. There was a genuine love that the players had for him. And, you know, my first couple of years being there, he wasn't as well as good as showing that to the players. And people didn't understand, like, players didn't understand it. But when you get older, you realize, man, he really does care for us. And it's a pretty cool thing. And, you know, it wasn't just the program changed. Everybody changed. You know, me as a person, Coach Harbaugh as a person, everybody just changed. And that's what, you know, helped the culture, you know, get to where it was. There's so many funny stories. I can't even, like, a team meeting after a big win. I think that's his favorite time of the week. Just because he just lets it rip in there, and everybody's just in there laughing. Like, he'll make a joke, and then for some reason nobody will laugh. He'll be like, well, I thought it was funny. And then we would all start laughing, and then he'll say something that, like, he didn't think was funny, and we would all be laughing at it. So, man, there are so many stories. I'm just drawing a blank right now.
Well, you talk about the program changing, and I know that part of your story is early in your career there, considering – transferring and deciding to stay and push through. How much do you look back on that as, like, sort of a defining moment of what got you to where you are now?
No doubt. You know, I always told Scott this in my interview process. It was, you know, it was a punch in the face because, I mean, my whole life I was the best player on any team that I played on, whether it was baseball, football, or basketball. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't the best. And, you know, that humbled me pretty quickly. And, you know, and I think COVID was the best thing for us. You know, we came into it very confident, and it was just a punch right in the face. But we were working. We worked every day. When they canceled the season, we were the only team still practicing. So I think just leaders stepped up, and, you know, our philosophy changed, and we took it around with it. And, you know, guys like Aiden Hutchinson, Andrew Vistardis, Josh Ross, they gave us a blueprint on, you know, what a leader is and how to lead a team and what a team should look like. So it was just up to us to take it and run with it.
Trevor, so outside of developing great offensive linemen here in Philadelphia, the offensive line is known in particular for one famous play these days in the NFL, and that is the tush push, the brotherly shove, whatever you'd like to call it. How much are you looking forward to running that play?
I'm super excited. We had something very similar to that at Michigan. It was just, you know, a wedge play on our short yards play. We were pretty successful at that. So hopefully I kind of have a little grip on it. But I'm just excited for it. If you're able to, you know, trust your own line and four down territory, if you're on the 50-yard line or you're just on the plus side of the field, and have faith in the whole line, have faith in the running back, he's going to hit the hole. I mean, the quarterback, he's going to, you know, wiggle his way through. It just shows your confidence in the team and confidence in your players to do their job and get it done. And I'm just really excited. And I'm excited to do it the first time in practice or in a preseason game.
Yeah, I don't know how much you're going to be doing it full speed in practice, but we'll hopefully get to it in a game. I know you've talked about, you were asked about this the other day, Trevor, the ambidexterity that you have, because, you know, the book on you is you played pretty much just left guard in college. Not that you can't do it, but the question is that, you know, if you are in the NFL, you got to be able to play both sides. How deep does that ambidexterity go? Like, what are we talking?
Like, I can shoot a basketball both ways. I write both ways. I haven't tried to swing a golf club, but, you know, I can throw both ways, sort of.
Okay.
I just, like, whenever I was growing up, I just always, like, try to do things both ways. And, you know, like you said, I haven't played a lot of right guard, but, you know, this whole process, you know, I've done right guard, I've done center, just training, try to show my versatility for these coaches. So, you know, it's just like wiping your butt a different way. You just got to get used to it.
That's what Stoutland says. That's what he's used for Milata. So that's good. You've already caught on. What about just sort of meeting your teammates? What was that like over the past weekend, getting to know these other rookies?
Yeah, it's cool. You know, they're all serious and they're ready to work. You know, it's me and them, they're excited. And we're on this journey together. It's almost like we're freshmen coming in, trying to help a program again. And we know that. We're going to try to get everything possible to help out the team. And, you know, earn our role and earn the respect of the guys in the room and as well as the coaches.
So, Trevor, in doing my research on you, I found that you're pursuing a master's degree in social work, which is great. And you were an undergraduate communications major in media. So I did want to extend an olive branch to you here on behalf of PHLY that if you find yourself with some downtime this summer and you've already mastered the playbook and all that, if you'd like to intern with us here at PHLY Eagles podcast, consider the invitation extended.
All right, I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's going to be hard work.
About doing something in sports broadcasting, so.
Yeah, we can give you your start, hopefully. So consider us.
Yeah, let's project out like 18 years down the line. You've achieved your Hall of Fame career. You're ready to hang it up. What's the goal after that?
Man, I think if I didn't have football, I'd probably go crazy. So I'd have to be a coach, or I'm definitely not pursuing social work. That was a non-degree seeking thing.
That yeah. Okay. All right.
But definitely something with sports, sports broadcasting or being a coach. That's kind of what I envision.
Love it.
Last thing for me, Trevor, is, you know, I don't think that we often enough think about, like, you are a young man in your 20s, like relocating to a new place for a new job. What are like the logistics of the last week and the next couple of weeks for you?
Yeah, I have no idea. you know, the whole process, I was like, man, I don't know where I'm going to live the next 4 years. I still don't.
It's kind of bizarre.
It is kind of bizarre, but I'm excited for it. You know, ever since I got drafted, I've just been doing research on, you know, the city of Philadelphia and trying to find spots to live in.
I do think we have an open office here if you want to just, you know, shack up here.
How much is the rent?
We'll keep it low for you.
Yeah,
I promise.
Yeah.
I'll do the internship for a month.
There you go.
And we will pay you in Miller Lite and Olipop.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm in.
All right, so Trevor, this is my last one for you. We all saw you chug the beer at the championship parade. You know, we'd love to see you chugging a beer on Broad Street one day. How many people have told you during this process and winding up in Philadelphia that you are a Philadelphia guy? Is that what you hear just nonstop?
Yeah, everybody keeps telling me that. The funny thing is, like, that was my only beer of the day. Everybody thought I was hammered, but I flew from Florida, and I was flying down to Florida the day after that. So, like, somebody just threw me a beer, and I was like, all right, might as well.
Plus, I mean, it was like 20 degrees. You had your shirt off. You had to warm up somehow.
Oh, yeah, it was cold. It was cold. I had to put the shirt on after, because then the dang frat dudes were throwing natural lights at us. Got hit in the head, cracked my head open.
Did you?
Oh.
I did, so... But, you
keep
know,
it's like you got to keep your head on a swivel. You don't know where the blitz is coming from. Like,
well, I was trying to catch one. And I turned around and I got doinked. Right,
they sent a stunt. Yeah.
Like, did that just happen? Like, my face is leaking in blood. So it was pretty cool.
And then, what is the story with the DeSean Jackson jersey? And like, did you have 32 jerseys ready to go?
No, I was just a big kid who loved like jerseys growing up. Like,
yeah,
if
love
there
it.
Was a guy who was balling out of the league, like, I was like, gotta get that for my birthday at Christmas. And when I got drafted, I'm like, damn, I don't have anything green, because we weren't allowed to wear green or red in our facility.
Oh.
Wait, I might have this in the archives right here. So I went all the way in the back of my closet and I pulled it out.
That's fantastic. Well, Trevor, thank you so much for taking the time. We look forward to getting to know you better, and hopefully this was a good introduction to the Eagles fans.
Absolutely, no doubt. Thank you for having me.
Thank you,
Trevor. Thanks so much. Great stuff.
I think
we can agree that the future is bright for Trevor Keegan, Jamie, just like the future can be bright for you with Shady Rays. That's why you got to wear those sunglasses. Get Trevor Keegan some shades. Get ready for the season ahead with quality shades built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company offering a world-class product rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Their shades have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor adventures. They have hundreds of options to choose from, so you're bound to find the perfect pair to match your style. We had a nice pair of Shady Rays gifted to my wife a couple months ago. She's still rocking them, loves them. So good. Shady Rays will hook you up. Exclusively for our listeners, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. Head to ShadyRays.com and use code PHLY for 35% off polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the Shades, rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people.
And let me tell you, it's springtime, so that means the housing market is heating up. I know firsthand because I referred my sister over to the lovely people at Mortgage CS.
Nice.
Because I met Alec and Ben.
A referral bonus for that or something?
Yeah. As soon as you meet these guys, and Ben's phone number is right there, you're going to know you got the right guys in your corner because they're workaholics, and they want to help educate and empower you. And springtime means, yes, the rates are higher. We all know that. But guess what? House prices are still going up. So if you're considering getting in a new house in the near future, do it now. And then Ben and Alec at Mortgage CS, they're going to help you maybe refinance down the line again when rates drop. But guess what? The house prices probably aren't going to go much lower. So if you're delaying it because of the rates, talk to Alec and Ben. They're going to teach you about the process. Mortgage CS is a white glove concierge service. And their goal is to educate and empower you. I've been through the mortgage process twice. And boy, oh boy, did I feel like an idiot. And credit reports and bank statements and this and that. They're going to make sure you're on top of everything so that you can go out there and obtain the best rate. Values are expected to keep going up on these houses, so don't put it off just because rates have increased. You can take care of that with Alec and Ben down the line. They will help you through all of this. So text Ben anytime, day or night, even if you want to talk about Trevor Keegan there. The CEO will get back to you. This guy is a workaholic. 267-391-7425. There's a reason people win more with Mortgage CS. So call or text Ben at 267-391-7425 and see for yourself. You can also go to mortgagecs.com/PHLY to check them out or view their 350-plus perfect 5-star reviews by searching Mortgage CS right now.
Stock up on Trevor Keegan.
He's got a job that he can go out and win. Like, there's a scenario he's a week one starter.
It's not insane.
No. Yeah. That's a great spot for him to land.
If you were spreading turkeys, it's probably like 70 on Tyler Steen.
Yeah.
Maybe 15 on Matt Hennessy, 10 on Mekhi Becton, and 5 on Trevor Keegan, something like that.
Okay.
It's a spot. That's a chance.
And
for week one, I'm saying.
Yeah,
I think. And
sure.
It's also like he can play his way into it if he's
yeah,
and he looks great right away.
Great question by you with the ambidexterity.
Mm.
That's a tricky one.
But it's a tough
one. Mouthful. He can throw left-handed. I'm in.
I mean, asked him what position he played in baseball or like was he switch
hitting.
Yeah. But
the fact that he can throw a football and shoot a basketball with the opposite hand leads very well to him being a swing guard.
Yeah, and you know, he as he said, he played it a little bit in the pre-draft process, like down at the Senior Bowl. I'm sure it's the kind of thing that takes a little bit of time, but
sure,
I wouldn't put it past him.
He's got one of the best teachers in the game here. You know, Jason Kelsey's not going anywhere. That's gonna be an extra coach.
Yeah,
he's gonna be right down the hall in our office.
Fantastic.
We can give him a
poor
free
Stark
run.
Is gonna get moved out again.
Poor Stark, yeah. But yeah, he seems like a great kid.
Good natural light in that office,
there is,
though.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It'll wake Trevor up in time.
Nice two windows, get a good breeze in there. We got plenty of TVs, we got arcades, Xboxes. I mean, it's basically a bro house over here.
Yeah.
So he's right at home.
There's you know, ice cold Miller Lite in the fridge.
Delicious Olipop. Orange squeeze Olipops. We got it all, man. Vince has got a cup of soups.
We could put him on the Union show.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We played baseball. I could talk some fills with you.
Yeah. Let's get him out there throwing a first pitch. I'd like to see this lefty-righty.
Yeah, maybe chuck them both at the same time.
Yeah,
like that.
Get, Fanatic and Mrs. Fanatic out there to catch him. You know, John Brazier, there's a free first pitch for you.
There you go. All right. Super chat from
MBDBDBDBF.
First time, long time, since everybody is not true. Maybe the first time with a super chat.
Ah.
That's not true either, I don't think.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no.
Since everybody is running cover three and these offenses are all underneath, why does Howie continue to devalue linebacker and safety?
Because he's got Cooper DeJean, obviously.
Yeah, I don't disagree with I think there's a difference between safety and corner. You're also talking about like what the market is saying. Like at safety, I think safety is an important position, but there were a lot of really good safeties on the market this year, and teams didn't pay them a lot. So you're not just like stack ranking the order of importance on your defense. You're figuring out where the efficiencies are in the market. At linebacker, I think part of the problem is there are only so many actual difference-making linebackers in the league. And so, like, yeah, it'd be great to have Fred Warner and pay him a lot of money, but the seventh best linebacker in the league is not that different than the 25th best linebacker in the league. And those guys can often be found late in the draft. Now, the Eagles have taken a lot of shots, and some of them have not worked. Last year, they released the best player on their team in the middle of the season. But I think it's I think generally speaking, the way that they approach linebacker is probably the right way to do it.
Probably, yes, especially if you have some guys that can cover, because I think they were getting gashed across the middle and with the other team's tight ends a little bit there. So as long as you got some guys that can supplement coverage, that's I think that's totally fine. You know, but I think the drop off from, like, what would you say TJ Edwards was? Like, probably a top 25 guy his final year.
For sure.
Top 20 guy.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they kind of planned on somebody at least getting close to that 25 mark, and then they realized, like, oh, wait, we probably don't have somebody that's, like, close to that 40 mark.
Right.
So I think...
But they've also just missed on evaluations.
Like, sure.
You know, they drafted Davion Taylor in the third round, and he didn't...
Which I was high on. I was high on at one point. When he came in, what was it, 3 years ago, and he had two forced fumbles in, like, his two games stand, I was like, oh, man. This kid's showing me something.
That's right. I think the Country City fumble that Darius Slay returned for.
Yes.
I think that was.
He showed a glimpse, and then it didn't happen. But that was one of those raw athletes with not a lot of football, you know, background to him. He was a track star. It just, I understand why they took that shot, because some of the athletic grading on that kid was phenomenal. But you also have to know. And I heard you and Zach talking about this before. Like, Zach's point was Jeremiah Trotter knows where to be. He might not be the fleetest of foot, but he knows the spot he's supposed to be in, whereas, like, somebody like Davion Taylor is going to blow him away athletically.
And at that position, that's what I would rather have.
I'd rather have the instinct, because that half second of deciding where to go or where to be is probably the difference in the NFL.
How pumped are you for Trotter?
I think it's an awesome, awesome story. I am excited.
You're trying to keep expectations in line.
Yes, yes. There's a reason I think he fell to the fifth round. I think it's a no-brainer pick in the fifth round. I mean, what do you got to lose? It's a position...
Like Trevor Keegan.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to keep my expectations healthy. I've heard the nickname the Hatchet. I didn't come up with it. A friend did, so I like that. I like seeing a Trotter jersey again in Eagles green.
Okay.
But I'm trying
keeping
to...
Keeping 54.
That is very cool. Trying to keep my expectations in check here.
Okay.
Which I think is...
It's like 30 years down the line when the new host of the PHLY Phillies pod is one of your daughters.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's cool, though. It's also... All right, so I had this thought. It's the negative side of this. Because of the PR publicity angle of the pick... What if he gets to camp and can't play? They're not going to cut him.
Oh, they're so shallow at linebacker that they need him on special teams anyway.
I mean, but he's a lock to make the team as a fifth rounder.
Well, yeah, but I think that's part of like they're just so thin at linebacker.
Yeah, but even if they weren't that thin and he was a fringe bubble player, he's going to make the team.
Probably, but
because you can't.
But you could say the same. Like Trevor Keegan's probably going to make the team.
Probably. Probably, but Stoutland, it's just like there is that PR, like it's not all rainbows and ice cream, you know?
Yeah.
Like if the kid can't play, they're not going to cut him.
I also think like they
and I think he can't
it all
play.
Played out well. Like they didn't draft him in the third round. You know, they like the league sort of spoke to what his value was.
Sure.
Then they went up to get him. They are not putting those kinds of expectations on him. But I do believe that there's a real chance that he ends up being, you know, a starting player for them by the second half of the season.
Really? I mean, you want the kid with between the ears. I follow Jeremiah on Instagram, and I've seen this kid working out like a NFL player since he was in like seventh, eighth grade. Like, this kid has a work ethic, and he's got the smarts, all of it. He's like perfect. We'll see. But I'm trying to keep my expectations in check is all.
Now, there was one thing that Trevor Keegan said that I wrote down just to bookmark, because I know that, like, he was a Red Star player for the Eagles. This is a guy who fit everything that they were looking for. But he said something that I think is the first time I've heard him say something that the Eagles may not agree with. And I think that Zach, I'm afraid it's too bad he's not here to catch this, but Trevor said, COVID was the best thing for us. And the Eagles have blamed their 2020 season on COVID. So this is
so you think he's got to drop that one?
They're going to have to. They're going to have to come to an agreement on that, whether they think COVID was good or bad.
COVID brought us Tyrese Maxey, so that was good.
There you go.
As a city. I think they should probably sit down and have that COVID discussion and get on the same page.
There you go.
You know, company line.
All right, before we get to Baldy, let's talk about our friends at ButcherBox. So I got the email today that my ButcherBox is on the way.
Oh, jealous.
I'm very excited. Zach already has his. And this is the thing. Like, you know what? I got that email, and then I got to go to figure out, what am I making for dinner tonight? And I got to, see what, I know what we have in the fridge. I know what stuff we have, but then I got I'm going to get home by this time. I got to make this. What am I going to, what's the actual meal that I'm going to make?
What's Zach's favorite cut of beef? Have you asked him? Do you know, how deep does your beef knowledge with Zach go here?
He just says that he likes steak.
He just likes all steak.
Yeah, he likes steak.
Okay.
He likes steak on the grill, and Emily won't let him use Montreal seasoning.
That is great.
Right. That's what he said, right?
So what does he do? Just salt and pepper?
Basically.
Okay. That's fine. Hey, you don't need much to have a great steak.
Yeah, it depends on.
But Montreal's nice every once in a while.
If it's as high quality as the Butcher Box meat, then you don't need too much. And that's what you're getting with Butcher Box, is that high quality, 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised, crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. It's all humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. They've got a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value, exclusive member deals, recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks, and all that good stuff. ButcherBox is offering our listeners an amazing offer where new users get free meat plus $20 off your first box. Join today using our link, butcherbox.com/PHLY, and use code PHLY to receive this exclusive offer today before time runs out.
And sometimes when I have a delicious steak, maybe I like to wash it down with a cold, delicious Miller Lite. Because Miller Lite, look, a steak is filling. You don't want to double down on the bloating and the post-meal uncomfortableness. You need a nice, cold, refreshing light beer that can help you enjoy those steaks. And whether it's a good meal you're with, whether you're going to a Birds game this fall and you're already, hoping for a road trip that you're going to pick out, Miller Lite's going to be there for you. Home, away, in the air, Miller Lite is sold pretty much everywhere that sells beer. And it's the original light beer since 1975. And think about how much the NFL has changed since 1975. They're not even the same sports anymore. But guess what? The same delicious taste of Miller Lite has remained the same over time because it's kind of perfect. It's less filling. It tastes like a beer should taste. What else can you ask for? The original light beer, a light beer that tastes like beer should. Less filling and only 96 calories. The original light beer since 1975. And you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling for those Butcher Box steaks. It's just perfect match. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered directly to your door, you can visit MillerLite.com/PHLYBirds, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than a premium regular beer.
All right.
It's beach season, Bo. We got to tighten it up. 96 calorie beers are the way.
Listen, 10 Miller Lights a day will get you ready for the beach.
Sure will.
Yeah. Waiting to hear from Baldy in a few minutes.
Oh, so Baldy.
Looking forward to that. What else is on your mind, Eagles-wise?
Really excited for this upcoming season. Last season ended in a less than spectacular fashion. I'm really excited. The fact that A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are locked up. The fact that this offense has more weapons than I can ever recall having on one offense in my life is really spectacular. I'm curious about the Kelce replacement plan, but I think, in the Eagles, I trust. We'll talk to Baldy about it, but there's no reason not to trust that they'll get this right. Offensively, they're loaded. Defensively, I think they addressed the Achilles heel of the team last year, which was coverage. A little hesitant about how the edge rushers are going to do, but again, Bryce Huff and Nolan Smith, time to step up here. You got a great opportunity. So overall, it's May, but the excitement for next year is definitely there.
That was a very professional filibustering. Nice job getting us from there to here, wherein now we get to talk
Do you like the way I threw the little tease in there as well? I've done this
great
before.
Stuff. Baldy, how we doing?
Rowan Bo, what's going on, guys?
What's up, Baldy?
We're doing good. We just had a chance to talk to Trevor Keegan, the fifth round rookie from Michigan. You know, great insight from him. I wonder if you have any thoughts on him after having a chance to watch him.
Well, I mean, when Trevor came to Michigan, it was kind of old school. I mean, Harbaugh just redshirted the class. I mean, he's one of those kids that just came in, 18 years old, out of, you know, school in Illinois. I mean, he sits there and, you know, you go in the weight room and you get your classes done and you redshirt, you know, and you go up against a pretty good team. You know, and so, like, he came the old way, 5 years. They had the pandemic year, but they played some games. But, you know, he was a three-year starter there on maybe the best offensive line in football that so many guys drafted out of Michigan over the last 3 years, really well coached. He's got a big frame. At one point in his college career, he weighed 345, 350. Like, he went and lost 30 pounds for better movement and explosion, all that kind of stuff. So he's kind of done it the old school way. Like, I think he got drafted. I thought he'd get drafted somewhere in the fourth or fifth round. But those kind of guys that are played a lot of college football in a run-based scheme where the run blocking is good, he's got good natural power. Like, those kind of guys end up becoming starters in the NFL. And that's what I expect Trevor to become.
So, Baldy, one of the things we learned in the interview, thanks to Bo's question, was how ambidextrous Trevor actually is. He says he can throw a football right and left. He can shoot a basketball right and left. Can you talk about how much of a head start that is for somebody that could, you know, be fighting for a swing guard position in the NFL?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of guys who can become swing guard, swing tackle, play multiple positions and not be ambidextrous.
Sure. That's but fun. There's a natural help there, isn't there?
It's on the field when you're challenging people to left-handed, you know, ball tosses and stuff like that. But regardless, like, I expect him to be able to flip sides. If he becomes the swing interior offensive lineman this year, where, you know, in some days in the NFL now you're dressing seven guys, if he becomes that guy, I expect him to be able to get in a right-handed stance or left-handed stance. Yeah, it's just something that you have to learn how to do. And so now's a good time of the year. You're out there on the field. You can work on some of this stuff. He was the left guard at Michigan. But I expect him to be able to do both and, you know, and learn another position. He's got the length. I'm not sure he can play tackle. He's got good size, but his arms aren't real long. He looks like a guy that should play inside, you know, guard or center. And I kind of expect that's what he's going to become, at least initially right now.
We don't have to make this all offensive line, but I do want to keep talking about the offensive line. Yeah.
Valdez got no problem there.
One of my favorite picks that the Eagles made over the course of draft weekend was my guy Dylan McMahon from NC State. I love the profile, the undersized center with this great short shuttle time, this extensive history of starting along all three interior offensive line positions. What do you think of Dylan McMahon?
Well, he's just that. He's undersized. So, you know, people naturally want to say, okay, can this be our next Jason Kelce? Well, he can't run like Jason could and still can. But that's okay. That's all right. I mean, there's a place for undersized guys. You know, the Eagles just signed one, you know, out of Temple, you know, in free agency. There's a place for these guys that know how to play with leverage, that have good first step quickness. You know, he's going to get a chance to win the backup center position here,
right
behind Cam Jurgens. He's going to get that opportunity. But even if he doesn't, the way the rules have changed since the pandemic, where you can keep 14 or 15 guys on the practice squad, it's almost like if you're on the 90-man squad right now, it's almost impossible to get cut. Like, you got to be really bad to get cut right now, because you're going to try and keep Lane Johnson healthy during the week. He's not going to do a lot of that stuff during the week. Like, so you're going to keep probably 10 or 11 offensive linemen right now, probably dress 8 or 9, you know, every weekend. And if you're not dressing, you're out there with Stout game day going right through an hour and a half straight of drills. So it's a great place for Dylan to come and learn. And knowing the history of what the Eagles had, you know, with Kelce retiring and, you know, and what he became coming out of Cincinnati 13 years ago.
So, Baldy, one of the guys we were talking about earlier in the show is Cooper DeJean, and the athletic ability. You know Vic Fangio very, very well. The idea we were talking about is kind of,
I don't want to say positionless because there's always a position, but is there a scenario where you see this kid kind of as like an amoeba all over the middle of the field, playing a little bit of safety, a little bit of like coverage linebacker, a little bit of slot, a little bit of corner? How do you kind of envision him slotting into this defense?
Well, I think that's Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's role right now. He's really good at it. I don't think it benefits Cooper DeJean to do that. Like, it might evolve into that, bro.
Okay.
But honestly, it's good if you just line up at, say, right corner right now and play right corner. That's where Bradbury's been. That's a weakness, a real weakness right now. Like, I don't know exactly how they're going to align these guys up when they get to minicamp and throughout the offseason right now. I guess we'll find out pretty soon. But I think it benefits them to learn corner. I don't think you can just say, okay, he's going to be this magical chess piece, and we'll put him there, because then you don't really master anything. I think it's important to learn a position, and if it evolves from there, that's good. And we think that he has that type of versatility, but that's kind of how he played at Iowa, but that was within the framework of the defense.
Sure.
I think to start with, like, get out there, do a bunch of one-on-ones against this receiving core of the Eagles, work on your man-to-man skills, work on your off-man coverage, work on your techniques, work on getting your hands on guys. Like, I just think right now, learn NFL fundamental techniques at cornerback, and then go from there.
And that is sort of how Jeff Statland has done things with guys in the past, right? Master this one position, and then we'll move on to working you around the different spots on the line. I'm going to keep it on the offensive line for you. You are close with the Jets, as you are with the Eagles. What do you make of Mekhi Becton coming here, trying to resurrect his career under Jeff Statland?
Well, I told somebody in the Eagles when they signed him, I said, you got to go back to Jason Peters' prime. I mean, his very prime, to find a more powerful player than Mekhi Becton.
Wow.
Like, this guy has unique power. I mean, Dwayne doesn't have it. Landon Dickerson doesn't have it. Mulata doesn't have it. This guy has unusual power. Now, he hasn't been able to stay on the field. Even his rookie year, which was sensational, I nicknamed him Highway 77. Like, he just cleared out a path his rookie year with the Jets. There was nobody more dominant in the run game than Mekhi. Now, he's had a number of injuries. He's had a lot of setbacks. And I think there's a question of just his level of toughness to stay on the field. If Mekhi was on this interview with me, I would say it to Mekhi. Like, I like him, and I want him to do good. They've got nothing to lose by signing Mekhi Becton. Now, he tried to, they put him at right tackle last year. Initially, he didn't like it. He balked at it. He thinks he's just a left tackle. He may have to be able to swing. So, he should work on his right tackle sets. But if they can keep him healthy, if Stout can get underneath him and get whatever's inside of him out, and if he can stay in shape, because that's been an issue too, if they do that, I mean, they got themselves a hell of a player.
Do you think he could play guard, Baldy?
I guess he could. He's never played guard. I don't know that, like, he thinks of himself, part of his issue, he's been immature since he came into this league. He's been immature. Like, I remember having him talk to Willie Rofe one year at OL Masterminds, just because Willie Rofe became a Hall of Famer. But he wasn't a Hall of Fame guy his first couple years in New Orleans. He became that guy. Like, he had his issues. He had a lot of issues early on in his career. So I thought, hey, talk to Willie. Here's a guy that's been through it, Mekhi. Learn from a guy that has been through this stuff. Like, he's kind of immature, but like, maybe being cut, being released, sometimes you got to get humbled to think, like, you're not all that. You got to, like, actually go to work, and you got to really work at your craft. I'm not dodging the question, Bo, but I think he could play guard. It just pads, I would want to play guard if I wanted to get back on the field and show everybody in New York that you made a mistake.
Well, that's like, the thing, right, is the spot for this Eagles team, if everybody stays healthy, where there is a job to be won, is right guard. And I guess it's, could it be Becton? How do you feel about Tyler Steen moving forward if he is the guy?
I think Tyler Steen's gotten a lot stronger. I think that's the first thing, is he's gotten stronger. They've been impressed by his work ethic and what he has done. And in his, limited play last year, he played pretty good. I know Lane would love to have Brandon Brooks back in their right guard. Just a big 340-pound Isaac Salemile. Give me a 340-pound, you know, guys that can move bodies inside and watch Lane just clean everything up on the backside, double teams, combo blocks. Mekhi is, on a good day, is probably 360. He might be more, but he can move. So I would say that you should at least look, see what it looks like at that position right now, because this could be the most powerful offense line of football if Mekhi found a way into the starting position.
So, Baldy, I got a non-football question for you here, because I'm not sure how much Zach and Bo actually know about the travel dog lifestyle here. I live vicariously through you on Instagram. Can you give us the travel dog travel itinerary for the summer here, Baldy?
Well, unfortunately, bro, like if I just step away here, you know, on my last trip to the Bahamas.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Like I, you know.
What happened?
I mean, you know, trying to get in the boat, sharks are coming, trying to, like, just get out of the water, you know, before anybody gets hungry.
I was going
to
ask if you were wrestling a crocodile or something.
Well, no, I wasn't doing that, but I was trying to get out of the boat and rip my tricep. So I just had surgery to reattach the tricep last Friday. So I'm kind of in this cast. I'm trying to do my best. I'm looking at the ocean right now. I'm trying to do my best to behave myself. Because I told this doctor, I only want to do this surgery once. So it's put everything, like, to Belize, to Bali, to Dubai, some of the places I was all scheduled to go, it's kind of on hold right now. I just if I still have youthful recovery or if I have old man recovery. I don't know yet. I got to find that out.
I believe in you, Baldy.
What's the recovery timeline? Are we going to still get, like, a little sliver of time before camp?
Well, I told Jaws, he's got his golf tournament, like, June 6th and 7th. I told him, I'm like, I don't think I can swing club June 6th and 7th. But I go there for the party.
Oh,
I
hell yeah.
And slam drinks with everybody. That'd be all right. I'm hoping by the time we get to July 4th that I can be a participant in a lot of different activities.
I'm doing, Baldy, we're doing a trip this summer, my wife and I, to Brazil and Argentina, Rio and Buenos Aires. I'm wondering
he's got tips for you.
Yeah, what your tips are for us.
Well, I mean, I've been to Brazil 10 times, and I'm going to go 11.
I think we have talked about this, yes.
I am going to go to São Paulo for the Eagles opener against Green Bay.
Nice.
Like, there's some things, you know, like, you can't, like, there's a big competition, like a daily competition between Argentinians and Brazilians over who cooks the best meat. Ooh. Now, I'm a carnivore. I eat nothing but meat. So I can tell you that the Argentinian grill is good, but I believe in the churrascaria in Brazil.
Really?
So, yeah. Like, I can eat that meat, three meals a day, 365 days a year, for sure, out of Brazil. So you have to do that. You got to go have a good carnivore setting. You know, I think Argentina, like Buenos Aires, is a really good walking city. It's a good blend of the old and the new in that city. But, you know, there's nobody that parties like Brazil in any event. Like, you want to go see, like, beach volleyball, there's a party going on. You know, you want to go see any kind of sporting event, soccer, whatever level, like, nothing compares. Like, if you want to go to La Bombonera, you know, where, you know, like, soccer in Argentina really, it, like, takes place, that stadium shakes like nothing else.
Just wear the right colors, I hear.
Boca Juniors at La Bombonera, like, that's a sporting event.
So, Baldy, what's the most exotic meat you've ever eaten?
Ooh, good question.
Well, I've had a lot. You know, I would say... You know, obviously the bison is pretty typical these days. Oxtail is like nothing else. Mm. Like that's, you know, that just falls off the bone.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, the old, just, you know, just frogs and alligator, you know, frogs and alligator. I mean, who doesn't go frog gigging in this world? You know, like for good bullfrogs, like, you know, that's, frog legs are a delicacy.
Yeah,
I might have you beat here, Baldy. I've had raw horse.
Ooh, in Iceland?
And whale bacon in Japan.
Whale bacon?
Yeah.
Wow. Right. I got to give that to Bo, Baldy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't had the whale bacon, but I mean, that's good blubber, you know, and the source of all bacon is good fat. So, you know, whale blubber fat bacon sounds good to me.
Yeah, I had some guinea pig in Ecuador.
Is that gross?
Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't run it back.
Well, swine wines. It's a dirty animal. Who doesn't love the pig?
Good point.
All you're the best.
You are.
Thank you so much for taking the
speedy
time.
Speedy recovery.
Insight on so many thank different fronts and speedy yeah. recovery. Absolutely.
Let's discuss the Eagles' schedule sometime next week.
Let's do it. It's supposed to come out on Wednesday. We can talk to you after that.
Sounds good, guys. See you, man.
See you, Baldy.
Just dynamic.
He's
just
the best. He is.
Fantastic. Just you know like you, Jamie.
Yeah. Do you know about the travel dog lifestyle?
I generally speaking.
He has a pack, a wolf pack.
Okay.
Three best friends anyone could have.
Oh, really? I didn't know it was just like three guys.
And they call themselves the travel dogs.
Okay.
And every summer, usually when he gets into the off season, they do something like really kick ass. Like they've gone and seen Rolling Stones and like Rome and Bruce and Paris, and they always have some exotic trip. So I know that that bums Baldy out that he can't possibly do that this off season.
I have faith that Baldy will get out there.
Baldy's going to have a good summer regardless.
Yeah, but I have pretty high faith in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is the man.
Well, Jamie, thank you for stepping in today.
My pleasure. Good to be back talking a little bird.
It was good to. I know Zach was. He's going to listen back to this.
He told me
he's not
that.
Watching it live.
I sent him the traffic advisory today for something, and I said,
that's
just a heads up. And he said, he's like, have fun. Good luck. I'll be watching later today or something like that.
And I was exactly. And he was probably yelling, like, get to the non football stuff. Get to the non football stuff. And it took until the very end of the episode with Baldy to make that happen. So Zach will be happy about that. And we are going to be back tomorrow. There's a chance that we have some press conferences tomorrow. So we are going to say right now, what are we saying? 4 o'clock for tomorrow, Julia? So right now, scheduled for a 4 o'clock show and then a 1:30 show on Friday. We have a special pair of guests to tease for Friday's episode.
Wow.
And I'm not going to go into specifics, but I am going to say one of the players who Baldy mentioned in that interview is potentially coming in on Friday. So there you go.
All right. I guess I'm going to go down the hall and start cleaning up Trevor's apartment.
Yep.
I'll get that ready for him.
And then you got this Phil's game to watch.
Yeah, Phil's today. So we'll be doing post game on the Phillies. We usually go live in the top of the ninth, roll it right into post game.
Oh, that's smart.
The Phillies are a wagon, Bo. It's really, really cool. They're the best team in baseball. They're loaded. It's a lot of fun.
It's a good time to be a Phillies fan.
It is indeed.
Jamie and Renee and Tyler have you set up for the PHLY Phillies podcast all summer long.
Yeah.
What a summer it's going to be. That'll do it for this episode of the PHLY Eagles podcast. Thank you to Trevor Keegan and Brian Baldinger, to Zach Berman for finally resting for a day. The indefatigable Mr. Berman. We'll look forward to seeing him tomorrow. And thank you to Julia for setting it all up. We will talk to you tomorrow, most likely at 4 o'clock. Stay tuned to our Twitter feeds to find out if that changes. And until then, we thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Make sure you subscribe, all that good stuff. And as always, we love you. Y'all silly like the mayor.